I think you can title this a poor substitute for Dan.
Okay.
You know, it's like, I mean, because he's like an author, really smart guy, and then you just got this sad little nerd that came in today.
I think you technically are an author and a really smart guy, right? So like...
Oh, yeah, but that was like a tech book. I mean, Dan is writing fiction, man.
That's next level.
I
hear that. I think we started.
Yeah, my books are.
I think this started. This is David Sparks, everybody, because Dan's still not here. Yeah. Although Dan's listening to us, but he's not speaking because there's probably a baby asleep. Yeah.
How exciting. Good for him.
Yeah. So you also have been busy because it's beta time and all that. What kind of stuff have you been working on this summer?
It's been crazy, Jason. I had two careers up until January 1st. I was a business lawyer for almost 30 years. And then the Max Sparky, I love it so much. I decided that's just what I'm going to do for the duration. And I thought things would slow down a little bit, and they've only sped up because, when you have one thing you can focus on, suddenly you can focus on one thing, right? So it's been great. We've been super busy on Mac Power Users. Lots of good shows. I got a couple other podcasts I'm doing. I started the Max Sparky Labs this year, which has been really fun. It gives me kind of an outlet to try things with people. And then just to commit to this whole new life, I decided to add a room onto my house. I'm calling it Indoor Studios. It's going to be a room that I can record in at any time of day. And, you know, just like, what if you made a room just to do the nerdy stuff that we do, and you didn't have to worry about, you know, whether your kids were doing the laundry or your wife was watching Hallmark Channel, you know? And, so I did that, and we're in the throes of that now. So it is crazy here. In fact, they're screwing in drywall like 20 feet from where we're recording.
Good. Well, I mean, listeners to this podcast will know that we often have, background noise is one of the things that I like. That my cats will meow, or the laundry will be going, or whatever. And that's just part of the deal. So Endor Studios. You were a big Star Wars fan. So it's like the, you know, where the Ewoks live on Endor Studios. I always laugh because I always read it as a double meaning because it's also indoor.
Yeah, I know. Studios. I get that.
Yeah. Just to, you know.
And any non-Star Wars fan is like, well, of course it's indoor.
Right. You know? I mean, why would it
why would it be outdoor, you know? Actually a listener suggested it, and I thought it was really a good name. And I like indoor. It's a happy place. Good things happen there. And unless you're a stormtrooper, then a lot of bad things happen. But it's fun. And I just felt like, you know, if I'm going to do this, I need to have some fun with it as well, you know. And
sure.
You think of all the great places, you know, there's Abbey Road, there's all these great studios around the world, and they all have cool names. So I felt like mine had to have one too.
I love it. Amazed because I've been in your house. You have had, with various kids moving in and out and all of that, you have been doing your law practice, but also, ramping up to be now full-time Max Sparky. You have been doing that from various places, including the corner of your bedroom and the corner of a room downstairs. And so what I'm actually most amazed by is the fact that you've gotten to this point without having your own dedicated space to do your work. But I'm very happy for you because that was obviously one of my big things, was trying to find a space in my garage to do my job all day instead of like doing podcasts, sitting on the bed and doing, you know, writing articles on the couch and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for the longest time, I did it out of the corner of the bedroom. When my oldest went off to college, I took her room. But I only had it for like a year because COVID, you know, and she came home and she needed a bedroom. And that was a 10 by 10 room, which honestly was not enough room for what I'm doing. And then I ended up like right smack dab in the middle of the house. You know, it's California. We got small houses. It's like a 1,500 square foot house. So ultimately, even though my kids are growing up and moving away, I felt like I still need to do this right. And, you know, it was kind of an interesting move. You know, it is a lot of money to add onto your house. But at the same time, I feel like sometimes, you know, like when Cortez burned his ships, like you have committed to something now And there is something about saying, okay, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this right. And that means I need to make some investment here and like set it up and, you know, set myself up to do the best possible job of what I want to do with the rest of my life. So I don't know. It's all felt pretty good, but I'm also right now at the point where it seems like every day there are a ton of interruptions. Mm-hmm. And you know, me getting out there and saying, oh, wait a second, you need an Ethernet drop here while I can do it now is, you know, adds another $50 as opposed to having to cut holes in the wall later. So, you know, it's worth it for me to be interrupted, but it's also kind of hard.
I like your metaphor there about the burning the ships. I would say that what's different about my setup here is that I didn't burn the ships. I'm more like, I like kind of dock the ships, tied them up because it's my garage. And so we didn't do a construction project. We did a couple little things, but mostly it was like, I put down carpet and I took over. I think what I usually refer to it as is a soft conversion of a garage, right? We did, the garage door is still here. I've had podcasts where that goes off when my son was coming back from school. That was always a thing. So it could turn back into a garage if need be, but it's just not. So it's like one of those kind of not fully committed because I didn't want to spend the money on it. But we were fortunate to have the big garage space that was usable for that. And we weren't parking our cars in the garage anymore anyway. We bought a minivan and it made it impossible to fit it in the garage. And we're like, okay, well, the garage is now storage, which, like you said, for a small house in California, that garage is a huge extra set of square feet that that we could do something with. And so we took the door that the entry to the garage used to be on the outside of the house, and we moved it to the inside of the house. And that made the biggest difference because now I can just, you know, walk. I used to have to walk outside, unlock the door, go in, get some tea, come back, lock the door, go back into the garage. It was no good. So this is better.
We have big plans for our garage. You know, it's funny because when I was younger, I was really into woodworking and furniture making. And like I made a lot of the furniture in our house. But just as the kids arrived, even before I started doing Max Barkey, that kind of ended just because you're busy raising kids and trying to do your job. And there just wasn't time for it. And as I hung up the law practice and realized, you know what, there will be some more time in my life. And I'm not really someone to sit around. I like doing things and I like creating with my hands. I'm like, you know, I want to reopen the wood shop, which entered this whole discussion. And now we're calling the garage Spark Industries. Mm-hmm. And we're going to, because Daisy has like crafting. We're interested in stained glass and my daughter does sewing. So we're going to turn it into kind of like a maker room.
Nice.
And that's like phase two. We got to get this indoor studio thing rolling, but it's exciting. I mean, I don't know. I feel like stuff like that is really good, especially if you work with words or computers a lot. I think finding things to do with your hands once in a while is a nice break.
Well, I've said for a long time that I feel like my interest in computer stuff is the same kind of impulse manifesting in me that my dad's interest in working with his hands on, like, you know, like, I mean, he ended up as an orthodontist, so he was that's entirely the little wires and all of that. But he would also like be very handy around the house and fix things, and had his own shop where he would, you know, cut boards and he did fences and dug post holes and all of this stuff. And I always thought that was like a similar impulse, just like, but I was born in 1970, and so I put it into personal computers instead.
Sure.
Tinkering and all of that, and you know, it's this running this wire and pulling out the circuit board or anything like that. Speaking of which, an example of that would be, I finally wrote up my e-ink smart calendar thing yesterday. I did a video about it for subscribers, for the little video level that we're still experimenting with, but I wrote it up yesterday, so people can read about my e-ink calendar experiment, which was fun. But same idea, where I'm just sort of like, I got an e-ink display, and I got a Raspberry Pi, and I had to write some Python code, but there was some open source, you know, people's code from the similar project that I could take and then modify, and it was just a fun. Again, it's that same kind of impulse, I think, of that fun project. And after I posted it, Lex Friedman popped into the Discord and said, "You know what you need to do is put a dad joke of the day on it. And here's an API." And it turns out that API the first one he sent, you had to pay to get access to the API of the joke of the day. But then he found one that was free. And I will admit, I did it. I actually implemented that, which was kind of a fun little project. And so now, at least for the moment, until we get tired of it, our little e-ink calendar in the kitchen has a dumb joke at the bottom. So thanks, Lex.
I love that. And this looks so nice, you know. It really looks good on your microwave here.
It's, you know, the 3D print is not... It's fine. It's not as nice as I was hoping it was. And I feel like it's something I mentioned in passing in the article, and I know we've talked about it actually on the Six Colors members Discord a little bit. Productizing these things, like, I feel like one of the reasons that it hasn't happened is because a lot of these products are really limited. It's the same supply chain stuff that bites Apple. Like Raspberry Pis, you can't buy them. And the reason is that, you know, Apple is limited because they've got some parts that are kind of on what they call the legacy nodes, which are like just old, not very exciting, but widely used little circuit boards, little microprocessors, things like that. And I feel like the Raspberry Pi is all legacy nodes. And so you just can't get them. And I happen to have one laying around. But in the long run, what I would really like to see is clever people out there kind of putting this stuff together, whether it's saying, I'm going to sell you an e-ink screen with a Raspberry Pi, or even better, like in a case. Because that would be nice, like, or just design nice 3D printed cases or whatever. Because that was my challenge. Is like, I look at that thing and it's like, the 3D print is okay, but like, somebody could, I'll tell you, my dad probably could have done that, where he could have made, like, done a frame and figured out how to loop everything through and all of that. And I'm not that kind of skilled, but I've had that same thought of like, could I buy a picture frame? And then how would I mount the Raspberry Pi on the back of the picture frame? And I've had those same thoughts too. So that's I just wish it was all a little bit nicer, because the 3D print is, it's passable. It's okay. It gets by in the kitchen next to the stack of papers that we have to deal with. It's okay.
So the next time you get down to Orange County, you know, yeah, got to head to Spark Industries, okay, and we'll get a piece of walnut or something.
All right, and you'll and help me out.
You and I'll put this together.
Make a little bespoke calendar. It's a fun. Otherwise, it's just been a fun project. So I like to tinker around with that. Oh, I wanted to mention something that I know is kind of near and dear to your heart, which is the other thing that I wrote this week for Six Colors, which was I emailed Peter Lewis, in fact, the guy who writes Keyboard Maestro, and I said, well, I did it again. It's been a little more than a year, so I don't want to write the I'm amazed by this thing that Keyboard Maestro lets me do like too often, but it'd been like 14, 15 months, so I did it again, and it was the mass deletion of the Six Colors Slack, RIP to the Six Colors Slack. Where Slack makes you click three times in three different places with waiting periods in between each click in order to delete a single user or deactivate a single user from Slack. And it was one of those things that I put off and I put off and I put off. And then I finally realized I can use Keyboard Maestro to do this. I can get it to click on those individual items using that amazing feature where it basically matches what's on screen and then clicks it. I'm always amazed, because it is the most, it's like the most desperate thing. It's like there's no other way to automate this thing. And Keyboard Maestro doesn't even break a sweat. It just goes, all right, okay. And I just like repeat 1,000 times, press play, and then go do something else for a little while. And it totally worked. It's amazing.
Yeah, I just used this action this week. So the action you're talking about is move and click at center of found image.
Yep.
So all you do is you take a screenshot of anything on the screen, and Keyboard Maestro clicks the direct center of it. And I don't know if you noticed with the most recent version of Apple Mail, I don't even know if you use Apple Mail anymore, but they've added a bunch of security features. And one of them is do not load remote content on mail, which actually I think is a good idea, because there's a lot of bad stuff delivered with attachments and remote content, and a lot of email doesn't really merit it. But sometimes I look at an email, I'm like, oh, this is an advertisement from some company that I like. What are the pictures, you know? And they have a button that says load remote content or something to that effect. And I started looking for a way to automate that. There's no menu command, right? So I can't automate it through the menu. I started poking around in AppleScript. I thought about writing Sal Segoyan, because, you know, he's the master of this stuff. And I thought that's stupid. And I thought, well, I'll just take a screenshot of the button, make a Keyboard Maestro action. So if I hit Control L when I'm in Apple Mail, it just looks at that button and pushes it. And I've been using it now for like 3 or 4 days. I'll do a little video on it for the Mac Sparky Labs, but it's just like a dumb little thing.
And it's so dumb that it's not automatable by some other means, but that's the brilliant thing about that feature in Keyboard Maestro is if it isn't, right? Because it's like, does it have automation hooks? Does it have a keyboard shortcut? Does it have a menu item? Does it, you go through all those things and the answer is no to all of them. It's like, well, it obviously has a UI because you can click it. So, and then Keyboard Maestro will do the job. I love it.
And without fail. I mean, it's just you hit Control L and it happens. You don't watch a mouse like slowly scroll across the screen or hunt for it. It just happens.
That was the funny thing about the thing I was doing is it's a long list and each of them have their own item. So it's clicking on the top one that it finds, but I needed to keep scrolling the list. So that was a thing I hadn't used before, which is I actually used their little like track. It's like scroll wheel emulation. Yeah. So it's like I measured and it's like 80 pixels or 79 pixels up. So every time after it clicks and it does all of that, then it scrolls up 80 pixels and then does it again. And it can keep going through that list of 1,000. And it's, you know, I mean, again, should it be this way? No, of course not. Slack should have an API. Slack should have a multi-select interface for this. But, you know, lots of interfaces don't do what we want. And that's what Keyboard Maestro is so great at. Like, I mean, I use it for all sorts of other things too, where it's running scripts that do like, I used to have an app that let me do keyboard shortcuts for hotkeys, global hotkeys for my music playback in the music app. I moved all that into Keyboard Maestro, right? Like in the end, it was just like, I can just put that in Keyboard Maestro. It's all it's doing is doing a little Apple script thing to the music app saying play pause or, you know, next track or whatever. I could just wire that into Keyboard Maestro because the app I was using got, it was not 32-bit, so it got deprecated. And I was like, what am I going to do? And the answer was, I'll just throw that into Keyboard Maestro. All my Stream Deck stuff is in Keyboard Maestro. It's like, it's just so useful. That people should
and
try
it. It's funny, because people wrote me as Shortcuts for Mac started to improve saying, well, do you even need Keyboard Maestro anymore? And I'm like, yes, you do. I mean, there are still things that Apple is just not interested in. I mean, when we talked to Apple after the big announcement of Shortcuts for Mac, I started asking them, hey, are we going to be able to select menu items or, you know, some of the stuff, some of the like old school tricks you use on the Mac to automate things that aren't normally automatable. And they just weren't interested in it. Now, the secret is Better Touch Tool has actually done a bunch of that stuff in Shortcuts, but nothing does it like Keyboard Maestro. I'm in the middle right now of recording update videos. I'm going to do a free update for version 10 of Keyboard Maestro for the field guide. And it just, this app just continues to impress me. And the bigger story, I think, right now is that is conglomeration the right word? I don't know. There is this unity of automation happening on the Mac that I don't think a lot of people are noticing, where you look at tools like Keyboard Maestro can run Shortcuts. Shortcuts can run Keyboard Maestro actions. Mm-hmm. Hazel can run Shortcuts. It's like suddenly we've got this super set of automation tools that all talk to each other. So you can take the best pieces of each one and combine them into really impressive automations. Keyboard Maestro, for instance, in my opinion, has never been very good at managing contacts. Shortcuts is amazing at that. So like now I can take a Keyboard Maestro shortcut and run the contact bits through Shortcuts or vice versa. And it's just, I don't know. I know the big story is about iPhone and iPad usually, but the Mac automation is really on the verge of becoming something special, I think.
My moment of clarity about Shortcuts on the Mac, because I had a moment where I built earlier this year. Everybody remembers Dan and I wrote like 90 articles about this podcast note script. Yeah. It was more like 5, but still, it was a lot in a short period of time. But we were kind of iterating on the fly, and I thought it was fun to post that stuff. It was a lot, but there was a real moment there where I built this whole thing in AppleScript, and then Dan said, I'm going to do it in Shortcuts. And I was like, why didn't I do it in Shortcuts? And the answer was, I was just thinking in an old way of thinking, which was just, this is, I know how to solve this. Always it's with AppleScript, and it wasn't. Shortcuts would have done it just fine. But that was a really good moment in another way, because I realized how superior Shortcuts was to AppleScript in certain ways. And the way I'll describe it is, you know, first off, everything you script in AppleScript is essentially you have to learn the language of that app that you're scripting. And that's the, yeah. one of the greatest failures of AppleScript is every app has its own dictionary. And in my opinion, the problem with that is that they're almost impossible sometimes to understand. And they all follow different rules. And so you just have to keep relearning and relearning and relearning. And to do things with the Finder in on the Mac is hard. It's really hard to do Finder scripting on the Mac. You can do it. But what I found when I was looking, especially looking at and then modifying Dan's shortcut for the podcast note thing, is all that file handling is so much clearer in Shortcuts. Like now, if I ever want to do an automation that involves like filtering for a particular file in a particular folder or something like that, so much easier to do that in Shortcuts than it is to, I'm sure if you're like a, if you know Finder scripting like the back of your hand, but I always get worried that I'm going to delete something or I'm going to mess something up. And it's always more frustrating. And Shortcuts is just so straightforward. And then not to mention anybody who doesn't use AppleScript or is not familiar with AppleScript, yeah. like forget it, just forget it. But Shortcuts makes it all really easy. It's like pick a folder, find the files in the folder that were created today that are MP3s. And then take them and move them somewhere else. Like you can do that in Shortcuts in a handful of steps. It's amazing.
Yeah. And then the other big piece for Shortcuts is all of a sudden third-party developers who have historically not wanted to bother with writing an AppleScript dictionary for their app for the 10 people that would use it. Now all of a sudden Shortcuts is a real option for them. It's easier to implement and more users are going to use it. And, you know, it's more of a selling point for them. So, you know, we talked about Audio Hijack, I think, before we started recording, but Audio Hijack has Shortcuts actions out, and I don't think they're done yet. And I think a lot of apps that historically really didn't have a lot of automation hooks are going to get them. And then you can combine that with Keyboard Maestro and Hazel. So, I mean, everything ties together. And, Shortcuts for Mac got a bad rap at the beginning. You know, it wasn't quite ready when it shipped. And there's a lot of reasons, you know, Swift UI probably being the biggest one. But the, they have made progress on this stuff. And if you look like in the background of it and you see the personnel movements at Apple, the Shortcuts team has been getting a lot of people who were the old school automators back in the, you know, the automator days and the AppleScript days. They're getting the people on the team that know how to automate a Mac, you know, and yeah. suddenly everything is working, you know, and no surprise, right?
Right. Yeah. My big complaint about Audio Hijack, I'm so happy that they have done what they've done, but they really just sort of threw in there, run a JavaScript, and then walked yeah. away. And that's one of my frustrations is I think really proper shortcut support means you need to actually build Shortcuts actions for your app and not just say, run a script, good luck. But it's a starting point, right? And
And if that's where they're done, I'll be disappointed. But if that's just putting their flag in the ground and, you know, after yeah. Ventura ships, they're going to, because I'm sure they have their hands full getting ready for a new operating system. But if they come back and like suddenly yeah. like start putting real script actions in there, that'll be impressive. But I feel like they're not the only ones that have been sitting on the sideline too long. And now I feel like we're going to get more.
I agree.
I'm very optimistic. I just feel like automation is going to get a lot easier for Mac users.
I think so. So next week, Apple event.
Yeah.
The truth is that we're in an information desert right now. And then next Wednesday, yeah. we're going to be completely inundated with information and things to talk about. But so I'm going to ask you the question that is, yeah, it's boring, but you know, this is where we are right now, which is what are you looking forward to next
yeah,
week?
I think it's fair. And honestly, I do feel like I'll be surprised if there are many unexpected announcements with respect to hardware. I think, you know, with the way hardware is made, everything has probably leaked that's major. And the software is where they catch it, right? You know, mm-hmm. you never know what's going to actually happen. But like I am most excited about is the camera, you know, like a lot of people, my iPhone is my primary camera. And the idea of a, you know, a 48 megapixel camera, even if they're going to do pixel binning on it, it's going to be a better low light camera. It's going to be able to do better video and probably noticeably so. And I'm very excited about that. I hope that comes true. And I hope that the Apple, photos team and camera team take advantage of it.
Yeah. It's software, and I would throw in marketing are the things that we don't know, right? Because they're both outside of the supply chain. And I think the things that I am looking forward to, I mean, the camera, yes, but I will pile on that and say how the camera is explained, because the rumor is they're going from 12 megapixels, which they've, megapixels is a bad measure, right? Because they've been at 12 megapixels for a very long time. And the iPhone camera from back when they went to 12 megapixels for the first time to now is not close.
It's not the same megapixels.
Right. The megapixels is the only thing that is the same. Like it is a completely different camera and vastly better. But people do pay attention to megapixels. And the larger question is sort of like, okay, well, if you've got 48 megapixels or whatever, what are you doing with those? And there are rumors out there about how they're going to do binning, and it's kind of like they're using that data to generate a 12 megapixel image, so it's sort of like deep fusion, but you don't have to take multiple images, you just take the one image and then you synthesize it. But that's the question, and Apple has always been so proud of its image processing, and I'm sure they're going to talk about the way that the A series chip that's in the phone with the new camera is going to have this amazing image processor that lets it do these things. And that's what I'm curious about, is sort of like, all right, we know this bare spec. What does it mean? Like, how does Apple talk about it? Because I'm sure that Apple is covering that, sensor with a whole bunch of secret sauce of software and image processing on their hardware, on their chips, and all of that stuff. And I'm that's the stuff that always fascinates me, is like, what's the story that they're telling, and what are the extras that they've laid on top of that sensor to make it this sort of unique iPhone experience. And that's the stuff that doesn't leak, because that one's a little bit too close to the vest.
Yeah, and there's like features I'm looking for. I know it's very popular to make fun of cinematic mode, but my wife and I have been playing with a Disney Vlog, which is very much an experiment, and sometimes we go months without updating it. But the ability to blur the background on a video off your phone without having to carry, a multi-$1,000, very heavy camera with you, is really an advantage for that type of stuff. But it's limited to 1K. Well, if you get this bigger sensor, are you able to get me to 4K with that cinematic mode and make it sharper? I don't know. I just feel like you're right. It's what they do with it. A bare number doesn't really mean anything. But I do feel like the way Apple approaches cameras is they're not going to put that in there unless they think they can make a leap. So I'm excited about that.
And
probably the most.
And video, like there are so many things that they continue to do in terms of processing video, and the more
stabilization.
I mean, the more pixels that you've got, the more data that you've got, the more things that you can try. I'm all fascinated by that. I guess the other one I'll throw out there is the persistent rumor of a bigger Apple Watch, because that's sort of stumped everybody, because again, we only know really the hardware part of it. And I am really just looking forward to the answer of how they chose to market that product. Is that product designed to be just a bigger Apple Watch? Is it something with a different product name? Is it targeted at a particular audience or not, right? Or is it aspirational and sporty, or is it just really big and nice and there's lots of things you can do with that? And that, again, is more of a what's the storytelling, what's the marketing around the product release than it is about the product itself, because I think in the end it will probably just be a bigger Apple Watch. but what can they enable? What does the extra size and battery allow them to enable in terms of, are there any software changes and how do they sell it? So that's always that's what we're left with since most hardware rumors are leaks are real and they come out of the supply chain, we are left back sort of paying attention to, yes, but what's the story they tell around the product, which I think is totally valid, right? Like, I mean, that's a huge part of what Apple is doing here, is if all Apple was doing was assembling parts, it wouldn't be Apple, right? The parts are always assembled in an interesting way with a particular product and a particular set of software features in mind.
Yeah, and there's like a story around the product, and that's where you kind of start to get a feel for what they're doing. I've been on a journey with this high-end watch. Initially, I was kind of against it because I've always liked the fact that whether you bought the, you know, $300 aluminum or the $20,000 gold, you got the same watch capabilities, you know, which felt to me very democratic, right? You know, it's like, okay, no matter who you are, you get the same Apple Watch. But then, so this is probably not going to be that anymore. I suspect that the silicon, the system on a chip may be different in this bigger watch or whatever it is, you know, and that's an assumption too. It may not be true, but I got thinking, well, I think I like that. I feel like everybody should still get the same Apple Watch, but then you start thinking about all of Apple's other products. Well, there's two different chips on the phones this year in particular. There are different levels of laptops. Everything Apple sells, you can get an upper and lower tier. So I guess maybe this is just a maturation process and this was inevitable.
Yeah, and it may be also, I mean, what I've been thinking is the big differentiators may be that if it's bigger, there's more room for things on the screen. And if it's bigger, there's a bigger battery. And so there maybe are some things that it can do because they can take advantage of the fact that it's got a larger battery. And then that would not be quite the same, right? That would be like the difference between the small and large watch now, which is it's more about a function of the size itself than it is, you know, where we put a high-end chip in this expensive model. But again, those are the decisions that, and the truth is, like, Apple doesn't make these decisions by going to a shopping cart and filling it up and then saying, well, what do we do with this, right? That's also part of Apple's thing, is like they're conceiving of the product and they are aware of what their hardware options are, but they're also kind of making lots of decisions. They're making decisions about what they think there's a market for. They're making decisions about what they are capable of doing in software and in their chips and what's on the table, you know, what's in the supermarket in terms of the sensors and, you know, anything else, the displays, anything else that they've got. And they put it together, and then it becomes this weird game of telephone where, you know, they're thinking of the whole product, but all we hear about is that supply chain rumor. So we don't get to, you know, we're kind of doing it backward at that point, but that's all will be revealed on Wednesday.
But, you know, also, like, going to your market analogy, right? What is that cheese you like? The Manchego?
Manchego.
Yeah. So, Spanish, like, you go to the market. Sometimes you go to the market and you can get all the cheddar you want, but maybe there's only a few pieces of Manchego, right? Mm-hmm. So a higher end watch may allow them to use a sensor or something that they could not use at scale of the normal Apple
Could
Watch.
Could be. Or that there may be not room for currently at its current size, right? In which case it's the same either way, right? I don't know. I agree with you though that the on upgrade this week I sort of stumbled into the idea that maybe they won't call it anything and it'll just be however many millimeters and it'll just be a bigger watch. Because we've been talking about, is it, you know, Apple Watch Pro, Apple Watch Max, Apple Watch Plus, Apple Watch Extreme? What is it? And I had that moment where I'm like, what if it's just a bigger Apple Watch? And I'm not sure I entirely believe that, but I think it's a possibility because that is sort of how the Apple Watch has been up to now. It's sort of been, you know, it's really differentiated by size and that's it.
And another piece for me is the Apple Watch really has become very ubiquitous in my world, you know, where everywhere I go, I see people wearing Apple Watches. I think the product has been a slow burn hit for them. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to start putting more effort, you know, more wood into the arrow on it.
Yeah. Everybody was, you know, the hype back, you know, 8 years ago when the Apple Watch was introduced. And I always remember that because it was basically, that's when I left Macworld and started Six Colors, was that product announcement cycle. Everybody's like, oh, it's not the new iPhone, or is it going to be the new iPhone? It's like literally nothing was ever going to be the new iPhone. Like, smartphones as a category is very special.
Yeah.
However, and the Apple Watch kind of struggled at the beginning because they're like, they weren't really that focused on what it would be. I think maybe they didn't really know what it would be, and so they tried a whole bunch of stuff and sort of waited to see what would happen. But yeah, you're absolutely right. They're everywhere. Like, it killed that category. I mean, it killed, well, I should rephrase that. It killed it. How about that? It did a great job and basically owns that category. And there are other players in it, but like, it made that category and it is the number one in that category, I think, by a wide margin, and has defined that category. And like, I don't know if anybody could really argue that the Apple Watch has been anything but successful for Apple, like, in the end. And maybe it took a little longer, And there were some stumbles along the way, but I think they got there. I think that it's a very successful product for them, especially when you consider that it's still just essentially an iPhone accessory. You still really do need an iPhone to set it up.
Yeah, I mean, I told this story on the Mac Power Users, but a college friend of mine called me recently, and he had an Apple Watch, and it said, hey, there's something going on with your heart. He went into the doctor, and they did some tests, immediately put him into surgery and gave him a zipper. And the doctor told him, hey, you were like within days of dropping dead. And he had no idea. And because he always used to make fun of all the Mac Sparky stuff. He said, look, buddy, I'm going to buy anything with an Apple logo on it for the rest of my life now. You know, I mean, and I feel like it is a product that does endear people, not just like saving lives, but even just like you work in a restaurant and you can't check your phone, but you have your text come on your wrist if you have kids to take care of or whatever. You know, it's just, I feel like it really lands, and they, I think they realize that.
Yeah. Well, next, I won't see you this time, I'm assuming.
Yeah. No, I'm not invited, but that's okay. I mean, I was shocked I got invited to WWDC, to be honest with you. But either way, it was fun being up there with you in June, but I really am looking forward to it. And we haven't talked about the always on screen. I feel like that is something I'm not going to really understand until I have one.
Right.
The widgets are cool, but when you have to tap your screen to see them, I find them of limited value.
Yeah. That's why I think everybody's like, oh yeah, we see what you're doing here. Cause like the great value is that it's ambient. I mean, I'm a big proponent of like putting little screens in places that you can just glance at, that you don't have to interact with, that have information on them. Having your phone laying there with a few little, very simple widgets that give you data if you want to look at them, instead of having to like tap or unlock or do any of those things. But it's all in the details of how they do that. That's one of those things that, being in the hands-on area afterward, I will actually get, presumably, to see in person. And that's going to be great, right? Because you really do, some of the stuff, you really need to see it in person. You really need to get that. And so I'll try to communicate that to people afterward. But you're right. I think that is a feature that really is going to need to be, not only am I curious about how they're implementing it and how that all works, but it needs to be seen to be judged. Cause right. Like, is it, why is my iPhone on? Like, is it annoying, or is it real subtle and useful, or is it so subtle that it's not useful? There was some speculation that I heard on some podcast recently about how, maybe focus modes factor into this too, where like when you're in sleep focus, they disappear and it goes totally blank. It's good stuff.
That would be clever if they did that.
Right? Yeah. Right. So that focus mode is actually part of this kind of larger story that they're telling. I'm looking forward to that a lot. And I'm happy to be surprised for them to do something else. But iPhones and Apple Watches alone are a big enough event. But I will point out that this is Apple's number one event of the year. And so if there's anything else Apple wants to push, whether it's promoting augmented reality or whether it's talking about how much they love developers in the App Store or how committed they are to environmental things, or like, you can tick off a list of things that they could talk about. They're not going to talk about all of them. But they will probably not just say down to business Apple Watch and iPhone, because it's their biggest audience. Like, it's the one that crashes the servers. This is the one everybody watches, is the iPhone event. I know that people who are really Apple focused are like, well, it's just another event. There are lots of them. We watch all of them. It's like, yeah, but the world watches the iPhone event. It is. So anytime they want to send any message just out into the void, generally their loudest, loudspeaker is iPhone event time. So that's another thing for us to watch, I suppose, is like, what do they choose to use that big stage to talk about?
Yeah, I was telling somebody recently that the iPhone launch, a botched iPhone launch is the one thing capable of getting Tim Cook fired. It is half of the income. Mm-hmm. I go to Six Colors. I look at those pretty charts. I get it. The iPhone is
Yeah.
Is the foundation of that company, and they have to get it right every time, and they are not going to stray the message outside of the iPhone. Yeah. I think it's going to be pretty simple.
Yeah.
iPhones and watches and maybe just a little bit of other stuff.
And Apple Fitness probably will get mentioned because it's literally an Apple Watch service, right? So it goes from the iPhone to the Apple Watch to Fitness Plus.
Yeah.
But the work begins next week. Have a good have a good Labor Day weekend, right? Like, as all of us are like, okay, rest up, right? Because it's going to start for real.
And I'm so ready for this construction to be over. I mean, they've been doing a great job, and it'll be done in a couple of weeks. But it is like, and now I understand why Apple had a hard time when they were building Apple Park, because it is super distracting.
Yeah, it is. All the decisions you have to make. I have a friend who's building a house, and it's the same thing. We redid a kitchen.
I can't imagine.
The number of details and questions, and you get to the point where they're asking about choices, and you're just like, I don't care. Just do it.
Yeah. Decision fatigue.
They're like, the moment, my breaking point for our kitchen, it was when they're like, so we can do a color matched wall plate for the outlets. And I was like, just make them white. I don't care. Just make them white. Enough. Stop with it.
Yeah.
And they're white to this day, and they're fine. I reached my limit. Well, good luck with Indoor Studios. I'll keep watching. We talk all the time when it's not a podcast. So we'll stay in touch, and I come down and visit you every so often in Southern California.
And I just want to congratulate you on the Six Colors expansion and everything you've been doing.
Thank you for all your advice. I should mention that Max Barkey Labs launched with three price tiers, and you and I went back and forth, right? Because I gave you some advice about doing a membership plan, and then you talked to people and gave me some advice about adding tiers and how to do that, and you were one of my big cheerleaders when I was starting to go down this route at the beginning of the year. And it turns out when it came time to implement it, there were a couple of features in Memberful that were only there because you got them to,
because I broke it first.
Yeah, you broke it for them, and they had to fix it, and then that was great, because then I came upon it and I was like, oh, this is the feature that David got them to fix. That is how we can do RSS. I believe the feature is, it's how we can, your RSS feed changes based on what member level you are.
Yeah.
That was not there. It didn't work. And now it does.
You know, I feel like, people come into your life, and you are one of those where you have been there with me, giving me good advice for, 15 years now? It seems like a long time that, you and I went through the thing where we left, employment kind of together.
Right.
And, when I was starting to do this membership thing, you gave me really good advice and encouragement. And I just hope I can give back to you a small percentage of all the good stuff you've given me over the years. And I really admire what you've done. And
well, thank you. It's very kind of you. And yes, I was happy to help give back a little bit to you, and happy to get you helping me. Like, it all works together.
It all works.
All right. Well, next week, I hope Dan will be back. So that'll be exciting. And I want to thank David and also all of the other guests that have been on this podcast in the intervening couple of months since Dan went on leave. But we'll have a lot to talk about if he does make the time. And maybe in the grandest tradition of Six Colors Podcast, there'll be a baby crying in the background. It could happen.
Well, it's hard when it first starts, but then probably he's ready to engage a bit,
A little bit.
Because you can only change so many diapers before you need to talk to an adult, right?
Just
so,
a little bit, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we will be back, or I will be back next week, hopefully with Dan. Keep watching the skies. Keep watching the Apple events. And, of course, Mac Sparky, for all of your David Sparks stuff. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Jason.